Good morning. I'm Joe Stevens. It's the 19th of February, 2016, and I'm here today interviewing Ann Reynolds Smith. And Ann in Wickenburg goes by Annie. Her address is 8 Lobo Lane, Santa Fe, New Mexico, 87508. Annie, let's start with a little bit about your background. Where were you born? Where did you go to school, etc.?
I was born in Hackensack, New Jersey, and spent my first, until I was in the fifth grade, we lived in Rutherford, New Jersey. Then we moved to Ridgewood. Then we moved, when I was in high school, to Vermont. And my education was in public schools, including a one-room schoolhouse in Vermont. And then I went away to school in New Hampshire, private school, on to Colby Junior College and the University of Colorado. And that's what brought me to the West.
I'll be darned. So what brought you to Wickenburg, and how old were you when you arrived?
How old would I have been? I was in my early 20s when I came to Wickenburg to Ramuda Ranch as a guest.
Remember what year?
1961.
So you came as a guest?
Yep.
With your family?
Yep. They were out here. I was working in New York, and I came out here to spend a week skiing in Colorado and a week on a guest ranch, and fell in love with it.
Now, you then ended up going to work for Ramuda Ranch, because that's the guest ranch you stayed at.
I had fulfilled my year of working in New York to please my family, and I decided I wanted to be at Ramuda Ranch. So I wrote Dana Burden, applied for a job as a secretary. I've never had any secretarial training, including typing. And Dana very nicely wrote back and said, it was good to hear from you, and we have nothing available at Ramuda, but I'll pass your name on to the other ranches in the area. And I wrote back and said, if I can't come to Ramuda, I'm not coming. Dana wrote back and said, come. The rest is history. That's a true story.
That's cool. Annie, there's at least two things I want to get to today. The first is, as much as possible, relate what it was like to have been a guest here, and we'll get some specifics about that. And the second thing is to get a sense of what it was like to work at Ramuda Guest Ranch, your interaction with the ownership, staff, guests. So let's start with what it was like to be a guest. What were some of the memorable people? What were the relationships of the guests with each other? Activities, integration into the town, that kind of thing.
As a guest, I was only here a week. Riding was the big event. We had breakfast rides, went out on them. We had guest rodeos, also gymkhanas. The guests and the staff all intermingled beautifully. There was a great rapport between both, which was interesting. Great. They were always a part of everything. It was great. And some of the memorable people, Robert Mitchum came with his family while I was a guest and also while I was an employee. Have pictures of that. Fred Babcock took pictures on all of these events that we had for the guests, and then you could buy them. They were wonderful. They were 5x7s, I think, and so I have pictures of out on our breakfast rides and things. The Donnelly family from Chicago were guests for many years. Who else could be the memorable people? Oh, Uncle Ben Perkins, who came to Arizona with his grandfather when he was 14 in a covered wagon. He came down from Chino Valley and spent the winter at Ramuda and met him when I was a guest, and then he was here all the time that I was employee. And Mary Ellen Arnell from Anchorage would come and spend most of the winter with us also. She eventually moved here. There were people like that, fascinating people to talk to. Uncle Ben particularly was incredible.
What was
he was what? The Perkinsville up here and outside of Chino Valley is named after his family. The Perkins family is an old, that's right. Where they settled.
Right.
Old time family. And Johnny could fill you in a lot on the Perkins family, because one of Marion, I think, at one point was mixed up with the mules at Grand Canyon.
Perkinsville is at the end of the rail line,
right,
coming out of Cottonwood,
right,
and is the turnaround location. It's a really beautiful little spot.
It's a beautiful, great spot, and I'll tell you who knows a lot about that is Jeff Ott.
Okay. How, as a guest, did you relate with the town? Did you come to town?
Oh, yeah. The way shopping in Wickenburg was incredible then. We had wonderful stores. Poncho's Kitchen Store, Dean Kingston's was we had about five or six Western stores. Everybody was wearing Western shirts and cowboy boots and Levi's and so forth. It was a very Western town then, and people came from Phoenix and Sun City. Sun City was just getting started, but they'd come up for the day. They loved it up here, and the shopping was incredible. Far better than today, I might add.
Okay. So, for shopping purposes, there was integration with the town, but no other real church going, that kind of thing?
I think probably the Catholic guests came to Mass. The town also, if we weren't full and we could take them in the dining room, there were many townspeople who would come over for supper. Many of them owned stores and things in town, like the Thurbers and whatnot. Another interesting person who was a guest and then moved here was Kirkpatrick. And he had the patent on the drill, as I recall, that drilled the Lincoln Tunnel. He was and he was the one that built the horse swimming pool over here. He also had an airstrip on the side of the hacienda. The horse swimming was for exercising horses. He was one of the people that was early on in that. Very
interesting. Where was that located?
It was located, it was on this side of the river, the west side of the river, just north of the bridge. It probably was before you got to where Saul's Wash comes in. He built this pool, and then the airstrip was right on the side of the river there.
Okay. Was that Ramuda's airstrip?
No, Ramuda's airstrip was on the east side of the river, up in the pasture land.
Right.
That, to my knowledge, was not operational when I was here. That had gone by the boards.
Okay.
But, and I don't know how many people came into Kirk's. I did. I flew in there. I might add, we also flipped because somebody had put a wire across the end of the runway with nothing on it, and our wheels caught it, and we flipped. It's one of those things you don't tell your parents.
Wow. That had been frightening.
I had a little cut. That was it.
Oh, you're lucky.
Paul Cleaver. They made me go over to the hospital, and Paul looked at it, and there was nothing. No stitches, no nothing. But
Dr.
anyway.
Paul Cleaver.
Yep,
Paul Cleaver. A legend that's still alive today.
Floyd Breuer and Paul Cleaver were the two doctors in town.
Right, right.
So.
Interesting. Now, then you went to work at the guest
ranch.
Yeah,
then I did then I got the job, and I came back in September knowing nothing about being a secretary. But in the very first day on the job, I'm sure Dana had second thoughts. I looked at this electric typewriter. It was a Royal. I can still see it. It was gray with blue keys. And do you think I could find an on-off button or anything? I didn't know anything about electric typewriter. So I finally went into the back office and said to Dana, how do you turn that damn thing on? And I'm sure he thought at that point, oh, my God, what have I done? Anyway, it worked out fine. I ended up running the office. I had another gal or two under me many times, and took over the bookkeeping.
Okay. And your interaction with the other staff?
It was great. I lived up in the bunkhouse until I was married, and we had a big living room. We had a wonderful time together. We'd have parties up there. One of the gals was an ex-home ec teacher. She taught me how to make Western shirts, and it's the first time ever I was able to make something I could wear. The staff all worked together beautifully. I can't think of any, while I was there, I can't think of any people that didn't get along. We had the children's counselors, which were great fun. Marion
tell me, while you're on that, tell me about the children's, what was their role?
The children's counselor, people that came with children under a certain age, now I'm going to say maybe 6 and under or 5 and under, we had a separate dining room for them, and we had one or two children's counselors. One was a Cherokee Indian, Morningstar, which of course the kids just ate up, and they would be with the kids during the day, so the parents were free to go off on big people's rides and so forth. I think they took the kids, as I recall, we'd take them out to the breakfast rides and things, but they went by vehicle rather than to ride. And the Burden children, Johnny's kids, all were in the kids' dining room with them.
I think we should briefly discuss the Burden children, because there was Jack and Sophie who originated the ranch. And while you were there, Jack had passed away,
right.
And there was Tootie, or Sophie, second Sophie,
right,
and called Tootie, and then Johnny, and Dana. Then Dana. And so Dana was running the ranch when you were here.
Dana was running the ranch, and Johnny was doing the books until he left. In the mid-60s, he and his family left. Uncle Pete, who was...
That was
Uncle Pete Fletcher, who was Sophie's brother, also, after Jack Burden died, he came in to help run the ranch, and his wife, Billy, was the school teacher when the schoolhouse was going.
And when you were here, the schoolhouse had already closed.
Had closed.
And was turned into a guest accommodation.
Right.
Okay. So it was that phase of was over.
Yep. The school, it used to be that the guests came out from the Midwest, most of them, would come out and spend a month or two, or even longer in Jody's case, and they'd bring their schoolwork with them so they could, and Johnny and Dana and Sophie went to this school too, and they'd do their lessons in the morning, and then they could go out and ride horseback in the afternoon or swim. It was a wonderful way of life. But they'd come for a long period of time.
So when you were there, guests came for shorter periods of time?
Yeah, that some of them, over Thanksgiving, over Christmas, and spring vacations, we were more than full. We had, people would say, oh, can't we put another rollaway in that room, and so forth. We were really, we also built up the horses, too, because we keep the remuda down in off-season, and then we'd go to the horse sales and buy 10 or 12 more horses so that we'd have enough horses for everybody to ride. We did, besides the breakfast rides, luncheon rides, dinner rides, moonlight rides, we also did scavenger hunts, which I'm sure they would be horrified at today. No helmets, no vests, just charge over the desert. I was on Uncle Pete's thoroughbred Buttercup, who was ridden about once a year. I mean, it was, nobody was ever hurt.
And what were you looking for?
Well, it turned out to be the treasure, which Dana put in the bottom of the swimming pool in a watertight box, and it had champagne and candy in it.
But why were you riding horseback if this was in the pool?
Because you're taking these clues and going to different points and to find out which, we had four teams. It was wild out there. And see which team could get to the treasure first. It was an incredible event. We used to do at Christmas time. This is when I was an employee, obviously. We used to do at Christmas time the luminarios, lining the tops of the buildings and down the pathway and the driveway and everything. And my ex-husband, Ron, and Dana and I, and Uncle Pete, would do the whole thing. We'd fold the bags, we'd put the sand in them, we'd put the candles in them and put them around. And I finally thought, you know, this is ridiculous after working all day. So I started a thing where down in the wash by the corrals, which was very sandy, we had the guests do the bags totally. And then all we had to do was put them around. But we also had hot chocolate, and two of the Wranglers played guitar, and we sang Christmas songs and whatnot, and it turned out to be a fabulous event that people loved. And it took the work away from, and I got out of even putting the bags around. The men did that.
And this was a lit candle.
Oh, yeah. We put them around, and then they went around and lighted them on Christmas Eve. That's very traditional in Santa Fe.
Only on Christmas Eve.
Only on Christmas Eve.
Yeah. Cool. Very cool. Okay.
But they were real. They weren't the fake ones that we have put up now. You can put up electric ones now.
There were some stores that you've talked about, and one of those stores you haven't mentioned yet was Ogg's Hogan.
Oh, that was my introduction. Ogg's Hogan is one of my favorite places.
What was it?
It was a Native American store. It carried wonderful jewelry, rugs, baskets, paintings, all done by Native Americans. And Charlie and Millie Ogg, who were from Prescott, had it. The Ogg family is a Prescott family, and they were down here because of Charlie's health. He couldn't take the altitude, so this is where they did their store. Their grandson, Jeff, still has an Ogg's Hogan in Prescott to this day. He did all the buying. He was trained by his grandparents. They spend the whole summer on the reservation. Millie and Charlie also sold to places like Yosemite, the Ahwahnee, and other places. They were traders as well, but then they opened the store in the winter only. With all this stuff closed in the summer.
No, you said on the reservation. Are we only talking Navajo?
Navajo and Hopi.
And Hopi, not Zuni.
Now, I don't... they probably did Zuni, too. They had... I'm not a devotee of Zuni jewelry, so I wasn't as aware of that. But I wanted a squash blossom necklace. Being a little Eastern girl, I wanted a squash blossom. And Millie said, when I'm on the reservation this summer, when I get back, I'll show you what I've gotten. And she had 8. And I said, I don't want to know the price of any of them. I want to pick the one I like, which I still have. And I did. It was the most expensive one. $200.
Oh, boy, $200.
And I paid that off.
Have you had it appraised?
I don't know what it is now. I've got to have Michael appraise my jewelry. I have a ton of Navajo jewelry. I'm just a freak for it. So, they taught me. At one point, I could tell you, I could look at a piece of turquoise and tell you what mine it came from. I spent so much time with them at the Hogan. Was a wonderful store. Bought a Navajo rug that was probably 4x6. I still have it. It was hand carded, hand spun, hand dyed, vegetable dye. Paid $25 for it. And I have it on the guest room floor. I mean, it was another world back then. It was fabulous. Millie and Charlie, all the guests went down there. Frick's Indian Store and Ogg's Hogan were the two places to go. Ogg's had a lot more ambiance than Frick's. Frick's just had the stuff laid out, but Ogg's...
In that small Hogan.
God, yes. Oh, it was incredible. I thought it was big.
Now, the Hogan today is still in existence. For how much longer, one doesn't know.
Looks good. It's painted.
Yes, it's at the corner of Highway 60 and El Recreo on the, would be the northwest corner. And so it still exists today. In that location. Okay.
It would be wonderful if somebody started an Indian store in it again. It's ideal for it. Ideal.
Yeah. Very neat. Very neat. Now, you left Wickenburg and the ranch?
Just before it closed. I mean, just before they sold it.
And that was in what year?
I left in 68 or 69. I'm not sure. They sold it in 70, I think, to Glen Berry. It was a disaster.
Now, they sold for what reason, or do you know?
They just couldn't make a go of it. Actually, guest ranches were sort of falling apart by that period of time. We would take guests.
Do you know what caused that?
Too many people trying to live off of it. You had Dana and Sophie and Billy and Uncle Pete. There was just too much family trying to live off of it, and they probably didn't charge enough. It was a very reasonable thing. Your horse was included in your room rate. And
it was American plan, so it was 3 squares a day.
3 squares a day, but they do something now. I see in many ranches today, you go for a week, Dana had a great big huge chart on the back wall for the whole season, and we had tape that we could put on it. And if you wanted to come for 2 days, he'd put that in. And then we'd work people in and around that. Many people came for 2 weeks. Some came for a week. Some came for a weekend. And Jerry Chambers from Chicago, he was the one that started Clipper Car Loading, one of the first piggyback tractor trailers on trains. And he loved it out here. And he'd regularly call up and say, have you got a room over this weekend? And he'd come out on Thursday night and leave Monday or something. I frequently went into Phoenix to meet him and do shopping for the ranch. Phoenix was much smaller then.
So what happened was people, instead of being here for a month or two, were coming for these real short periods of time.
Short periods of time. And some of them came for a month. And a number of them ended up having homes up here off of Jack Burton Road. That whole thing sort of developed from the Kirkpatricks were up there, the Picks were up there. They were West Bend products, West Bend coffee pots and stuff like that. They ended up building up there. There were a bunch of people that ended up.
I think Dana subdivided much of that area north of the ranch buildings itself and south, actually.
It would be basically, south. And the Sterlings were one
north.
Of the first people that bought a hunk of land just before I came here. They were guests. And they bought Jeff bought the land in 60.
Dana told me that story. He said they had come as guests to the ranch. And then they had hired an automobile. And they toured Arizona looking for a place to build a home. And they came back to Ramuda and said, we just couldn't find anything we liked. And Dana said, come with me. And he went down to the stable and saddled up three horses and rode them up on top of the hill, and they bought on the spot. Interesting story.
It's an interesting story, and they're still there.
And Joycey's still there.
Yep. And, that was great. Oh, another thing, as guests and employees interacting, we used to love to go to the bars downtown in the evening. La Cabana and Bar 7, both still there. Isla was the barmaid at La Cabana, and she knew what everybody drank. You'd go in, and she'd say the usual, and we'd say yes. We danced in the back there. We danced and fun, and we took guests down with us. Not all guests were into that type of thing, but some of the younger ones thought that was really neat. So the staff, we'd all go down there, and then somebody would say, I think we ought to see what's going on over at Bar 7. So we'd pick up our drinks and we'd go across Route 60 and go to Bar 7. And they somehow got the glasses and everything sorted out at some point. But the two places, we went to both of them. I think probably La Cabana, because they had the wonderful dancing area, was probably the one that we went to the most. But that was always great fun.
No, at Ramuda, was there a liquor license and a bar?
No, we had BYOL. And
Bring
your own liquor. And we had a cart that you could put your own bottle on. Dana made little leather tags to put your name on over the top of them. And then we would supply the setups and some hors d'oeuvres, chili con queso, whatever. Each evening, Sophie or Pete would roll the bar out, or Dana, by, I don't know, 5:30 or something, and we'd gather in the lounge, and people would drink, but I really hardly ever saw excess drinking going on. I'm sure some of these people drank down in their rooms at night, but we did not have a liquor license. Sophie was adamant that we should not be selling booze around small children. So we didn't.
So you left and went back to Vermont.
Right.
Go ahead.
Went into the retail business. I did end book. I still did bookkeeping. I was with a sportswear store and did buying, selling their shows and kept their books until I came back west in 99.
What brought you back? That was from 66 to 99 that you were gone?
No, about 68 or 69.
So 30 years.
I was gone. My mother had died, And my father wanted me to take over the family farm we had restored. It was not a working farm. We restored an old working farm. And after all my family had done for me, I couldn't say no. So I did. And then once my father died, of which I might add, he said, we went there in 41, he bought the place. He said, now after I'm gone, he said, I want you to put the farm on the market and sell it. Vermont is not the state I came to in 1941. It's the state of Bernie Sanders now, and it has done a complete flip. So I did. It was a 150-acre farm and whatnot. It was too much for me to handle, and it was expensive, and I always loved it in the West. So the two places I knew were Hawaii and Arizona. Hawaii's far away, expensive. Arizona seemed reasonable, and so I came back here. But then I missed snow. My father had told me that I would miss snow, and I couldn't believe it, but I did after living here for a while. And so I went to Santa Fe, which has got snow, and it's got nice weather.
Well,
it's still in the West.
When you came back here, what changes had you seen in the town?
Oh, God, the retail end of the town had fallen apart. Poncho's, Dean Kingston's, the Westerner, Ryan Evans Drugstore was on the corner across from the livery. Now Johnson's was here in the 60s, but now that's closed. The museum, was that started when I was here in the 60s and then it burned down?
I don't remember when it started.
Sky Thurber. It was Brayton's Commercial when I first came.
Right.
And then I can't remember if it started to be the museum while I was still here or not. Then it burned down, and that's come up.
I think
so
it
the
burned
museum
down in 72, if I remember.
Okay, correctly. So then it was started in the late 60s as a museum. And so it was Brayton's Commercial. Another big change, during the 60s, they stopped passenger trains through here. We used to, we had guests that would come by train, Tex Lowe being one of them with his dog, and from Chicago. And when a guest left, there were two things we did. We had a cannon up at Ramuda, up on the hill, and as they drove out through the gates, we'd shoot off the cannon to say goodbye. And then the other thing we would do, we'd take the hearse, the old hearse, down to the railroad station, and we'd shoot, that Dana and Johnny and Uncle Pete would shoot blanks up as they got on the train and left. And that was great fun, but the train stopped in the mid-60s.
And what was across the street from the train station? Or was it gone by then? The Bucket of Blood Saloon?
Oh, I think it was gone
by
then. I don't know.
Because early on, the tradition was to take them to the train station, shoot off the blanks, and when they got on the train, then everybody'd go across the street.
Oh, no, that was gone by then, I think.
Okay.
Gold Rush Days was a fabulous event. There were no carnivals. There were no vendors of any sort. It was the local businesses who did a great business. We all dressed in period dress. The women were all running around town in long dresses, and the Gold Shirt Gang was around town all the time. The melodrama went on. Fabulous parade that all the ranches participated in. All the guests were saddled up and rode in the parade. I know at Ramuda, several of us had other floats or entries of staff put together, and it was a big, wonderful event. And, of course, there were groups that came from out of town and whatnot. The parade was the big thing. And just being around town and making it have the feel of what it had been like at the turn of the century or something, it was fabulous fun. So that's very changed.
Very changed, yeah.
Of course, the other thing that changed, it was right after the 60s that the I-10, the Brenda Cutoff, was completed. And that, in my book, it killed businesses that probably shouldn't have been in business anyway. It hurt a lot of businesses that were a little bit fly-by-night, but the good guys, like Rancho Grande Motel and so forth, the good guys survived. And there were a bunch of gas stations and I think probably some more motels that were pretty tacky, that didn't make it, and to me, that was a good thing. The guest ranch business, probably the 60s, at least the first part of it, was really the height of the guest ranches here, the 50s and 60s. We had, I forget how many.
11.
C4 was gone by then. Diamond P was a place that they got people that came all the time, that would come for the winter and whatnot in their little cottages. And the big ones were Monta Vista, which Carl Bylan closed and tore down. It was the damnedest thing in the world. Johnny's wife worked there, Maureen. But Flying E, Ramuda, and Los Caballeros were the biggies. And we would get together during the height of the season, particularly over holiday times. We'd have these little gymkhanas at the different ranches. We'd ride over and have a picnic and do barrel racing and whatever. The guests loved those things. Our guests did, particularly. Ramuda was known for having the best riding because we had everything from here all the way to I-17. Mm-hmm. Was really... I'll tell you another thing. One of our guests, Jerry Chambers, did that with whenever he came out, we'd go gold panning. We all went down to Wickenburg Mine Supply, which was right across from the railroad station then, the place with the big steer up on top. We all were down there. We all had our gold pans and so forth. And we'd go up here by Stanton and go gold panning.
Do any good?
Yeah. Someplace I still have a couple of little pieces I found. we got caught. It was wonderful to have the guests and people caught up in that type of thing. As I say, in the 60s, Phoenix was basically a drive through the desert to get from downtown Phoenix to Scottsdale. And as I recall, Bell Road was still a dirt road. And you look at it now, and it's
Orange Groves.
Over and Litchfield Park, I used to call the smelliest city, and there were orange groves all over the place. And if you went down through there when they were in bloom, oh my God, the odor, just, I loved it, just about knocked you over. The wigwam was going strong then. Camelback, Mountain Shadows is gone. In Phoenix, it was Camelback Inn and Mountain Shadows were two of the big places. And I guess the Biltmore also. But I always talk to people at Mountain Shadows and Camelback Inn.
Do you have a favorite Wickenburg memory?
I just think my days at Bermuda, I loved those days. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience. I made no money, so you have to live more like a pauper now. But it was just great fun. The Burden family, they just took everybody in, whether they were guests or employees. Granny Sophie was a mother to us all, because most of us were in our 20s that were working there. And she was... Dana and Johnny, Uncle Pete was in the middle of everything. Everybody loved Uncle Pete. I'm not quite sure what all he did except get the mail and do some errands and whatnot. And he led rides. He would, particularly when we were busy over Christmas, we would need extra wranglers or to take, we might have four or five rides out instead of a couple. Riding was the sport. There was a tennis court, not very much action on it at all.
And a swimming pool.
And the swimming pool, which was always under repair. But we didn't use it that much. It was spring vacation people that used the swimming pool. It was too cold. Mm-hmm. I wore out a down parka here. It's not hot in the winter, way some people think. I remember it was either the 3rd or 4th of April one year. I have pictures of Wickenburg under, it's either 3 or 4 inches of snow. I get it confused, but that's what we had in April one year.
Mm-hmm. Can happen, that's for
And
sure.
Dana was, he was head of the Roundup Club, which was the Chamber of Commerce. And it was down by, I think, the Hanging Tree then. I think it was the old hat.
It was across the street somewhere near... wasn't it kind of near the Bar 7?
It was down more toward the bridge.
Yeah.
And Dana was incredible with promoting guest ranch vacations. He was in constant sending releases out to the Los Angeles Times, to the London Times. We had tons of staff that came from England over the years because of an ad that he did years ago. We had several English girls there when I was there, and he was constant. We'd do cookouts for travel agents, and we get things organized that way. We did a big cookout promotional thing, fundraiser for Barry Goldwater, for instance, when he was running. Goldwater was a great friend of the Burden family. But Dana was, he really promoted Wickenburg beautifully. We had the whole huge Airstream group here, something, I forget how many Airstream trailers were parked out north of town. It was just astronomical.
Wally Byam.
Is that what it was?
It's called, yeah.
Yep, and we got things like that in town because of Dana. They were good things, and they really supported the business. I'm sort of out of touch with that type of thing now. I don't totally know what you have. I know Gold Rush Days is a huge thing, but it's the big difference between Gold Rush Days now and then we all went into town to participate. Now we stay out of town, let the foreigners come in, as far as I can see. Although I did get my towel bars there, so I can't knock it totally one year.
Now, you moved to Santa Fe 9.5 years ago. I think it's September coming up that you...
It'll be 10 years.
10 years.
Labor Day weekend.
But you keep coming back. Why?
Well, I have my friends from the 60s. I have the friends I made... like Joe, during the period I was here from 99 to 2006, it was a whole new group of people. I got mixed up with the museum as I was supposed to be a docent, but I ended up doing admissions. Peter Booth wanted me there. And as a result of that, I've ended up knowing some interesting people like Cynthia Rigdon and the Hayes family. And I come down every year to do my 2 days of sculpting with Cynthia Rigdon, and that brings me back. And also, my dog groomer is here.
And that's important.
So it's a good excuse to come down. I do not come down in the summer.
That's true. I have not seen you in the summer.
It's too hot. The only thing that would ever bring me down in the summer is a funeral, I hate to say, but that's what would bring me down. But I still have... I have a lot of friends here, and I still like the small town. It sort of hurts me at times to see how the retail end of it has sort of fallen apart. Although I think East Wickenburg Way and Tegner up here are looking pretty good, but West Wickenburg Way is sort of sad to me. I have friends out at Los Cabs still, the Andersons. Julia Hobart, by the way, had a rattlesnake on her doorstep the other day. They're out.
They're out, and it's very early.
It is. We always used to say at the ranch, I can remember the rides coming in, and they'd say, well, we saw our first rattlesnake. And without fail, it used to be March 25th. Hmm. It was interesting. For years, all during the 60s, that would be it. And we also used to see huge tarantulas when we go out on them. I remember it particularly on the, I guess, luncheon rides.
It's interesting you say that. I've seen several huge tarantulas, but that was 10 and 15 years ago. Well, I haven't seen any since.
See, and I don't know now because I haven't been out there, but in the 60s, and the kids used to, I even let a tarantula climb up my arm, but the kids kept them as pets.
Yeah.
Dana also, one of the great activities, too, was to go out with Dana into the backcountry to some of the old mines out Constellation and out to Sayre Station. And a couple of times they led hikes up Vulture Peak. I mean, there was a lot of stuff you could do, but riding was the big draw for Ramuda Ranch.
One of the stories Dana told me about Vulture Peak was they'd bring guests up to the top. And if you go off the east side of the top, there's a little trail goes down to a couple of caves. And Uncle Pete would walk up to the edge, and then he'd jump off the edge. And the guests would freak out because it's a sheer drop, except that there's a ledge right below.
God.
And he'd land on the ledge. frightening.
I'll tell you another thing that the Burden family did, Sophie did, for the staff at the end of the season. We went to Supai, and we would camp out there for 2 weeks, and the staff could come for 2 days. I went for 2 weeks. I wasn't going to miss out on anything. And Dana was there 2 weeks, and it was very different in Supai then than it is now. We were the only people down there, usually below, I call it Bridal Veil Falls. They think its real name is Havasu Falls. And before the floods had come, there were these travertine pools. The falls came down, and there was a big pool you could swim in. And then there were these little travertine bathtub-type things, and we'd sit in those, and the water would come in and come around on you. We ate watercress sandwiches, watercress picked from the brook. We took Hickory Farms summer sausages and would do sandwiches out of those. There was a little store. We could get a few things in the store in Supai. Everything had to be packed in. And so there wasn't a great deal, but there would be bread and mayonnaise and stuff and soda pop. Indians love soda pop. Uncle Pete and I were asked to dinner at Stanley Manikachaw's house one night, and I was so excited. Here's this little girl from the East, and she's going to get to have dinner in the home of Havasupai Indians. So we announced to the group that we wouldn't be there for dinner. We're going up to the village to have supper with Stanley Manikachaw and his...
And who was he?
He was the chief of police in Havasupai then.
Okay.
Manikachaw family was a big family in Supai. We had I don't think it was Stanley's son, but we had a Manikachaw Homer who we kept on the ranch. Sophie brought out, and he worked for us on the ranch for a year or two. Nice kid, unfortunately, like Indians do. He was drinking one night at the Flagstaff Rodeo or whatever and wrapped his car around a tree, and that was the end of him. But that's the big problem on the reservation. We got up to Stanley's house, and nobody there, nobody at all. So we walked into the village to see what we could see, and we ran into Stanley on his palomino. Uncle Pete, how are you? And Pete never said anything. I thought we were coming for dinner. Never said a word. So we finally parted ways, and we went into the store and bought a can of tamales and went out behind the motel and heated them in a little fire that we managed to make, and that was our dinner. So I never did get my meal in a Havasupai Indian's home. Just really, you never know with the Indians. Supai was a wonderful place then. Saw my first live rattlesnake there. Guests would ask us this, what does a rattlesnake sound like? And until you've heard one, you still can't describe it, but you just say to them, you'll know it when you hear it, and it's true, because that's what happened to me.
And what's frightening is as people lose their hearing, they can't
hear them.
And it was true of Dana. We'd be out in the Jeeps, and I'd hear a rattlesnake, and I'd say, Dana, he'd never hear it.
Really? I didn't know he was hard of hearing.
Well, at that decibel level, he lost it.
Interesting. No, and of course, the other thing you have to watch out for, they don't all rattle.
That's true.
So that's one thing we have fewer of in Santa Fe.
Colder weather.
I always had about five a season out at my house.
Here?
Yeah.
But you were in the desert.
Yeah, I was out of town.
Right.
And I really think what happened just over the hill on the other side of Craig's, there were some houses that were built, and I think it disturbed them. Amory up on the hill, he used to have a ton of them back then, and John did, and I think it's because they were trying to find a new location, and the ones that came east found us.
Yeah, it disturbed their dens.
But Dana loved it out in the desert, as you know, and he loved taking people exploring. We went the back way from Stanton up to Yarnell. We had a picnic along the way. No, it was great fun. It was very, very informal at Ramuda. There was nothing fancy about us out there. The accommodations, everything was really very simple, very Western, and very friendly. We had really very, we had wonderful guests. There were very few that we didn't like. There's the one that pointed a loaded gun at me in the office. His wife had gotten lost on a luncheon ride. She and a friend decided to break off from the group and go a different direction. And so when it came 4:30, 5 o'clock, they still weren't in. The Wranglers were out trying to find them. And the husband, Bill Mansfield, I think was his name, he came into the office with a loaded gun and pointed it at me. And he was after the Wrangler, who was Jack Barnes, that had been the Wrangler on her ride. And never mind, it's springtime, and probably he's got 15 or 20 people, and you're not totally, they're supposed to keep up. So I was scared, silly. And I went into the dining room at supper time now, and he was trying to find Jack Barnes, is what he was trying to find. So we called up to where Jack stayed with his mother and said, get the hell out of here. And I went into the dining room, and Mary Ellen said, she said she took one look at me and knew something was wrong.
Who's
she said,
Mary Ellen?
Mary Ellen Arnell from Alaska that used to winter here. I talked about earlier. She knew something was wrong, and so Dana came into the office and took care of things. But they left the next day, those people. She gave me a wonderful shirt from the Bustle. Bustle was a wonderful clothing store in town. It was not Western wear, it was Eastern wear. And, of course, Los Cab and all our guests were Eastern people. But Joe Rady, who ran it and owned it, she always bought out of the California market, which was far more exciting clothing than went out of the New York market. So they'd all come into the Bustle and get slacks and shirts and dresses even to
take back home.
Take back home. It was Ray's Saddlery then,
mm-hmm.
Ray Bybee.
Mm-hmm. Called Ben's Saddlery today.
Called Ben's, but Ray was there for years.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very popular store. But it's interesting. That's one store that's still a saddlery. I can't think of, Poncho's was a kitchen store. We had, the old post office was right near the railroad station. It was up whatever that street is that's right opposite the railroad station. That's where the post office was till it moved out. It was all there all during the 60s. And even after that, because I came back to visit one time and went to the post office for something and ran into Teresa Miller. Her son, Carl, was, I think, chief of police at one point. And Teresa was a wonderful Mexican cook. Her father had been a cook up at one of the gold mines, Stanton or someplace up there. And she was, I think Teresa was only about 5 feet tall. She taught me how to make Mexican food. I said, Teresa, I want to know how to make a Mexican dinner. Oh, I'll show you. So she said, the next time I do it at the ranch, I'll give you the recipes. Well, they were in quantities to feed 60 people, so I had to cut them down. But she would give me the bran to get of refried beans and enchilada sauce and stuff. So then when Dana and Ron and I, my ex-husband, did the ranch up in Colorado on the cook's night off, I did the Mexican food.
What did you do in Colorado?
We ran a guest ranch for two Texans.
In the summer?
In the summer. It was up above Vicedo Reservoir. We had 5 miles of private fly fishing river, and there was one place above us, and then it was National Forest. We were up at 8,000 feet. My husband and I lived in a homestead cottage with a dirt roof, and the door was only about that high. It had had the duct to go in, and it had old oriental rugs over the dirt floor. It was a riot. A bathroom, modern bathroom had been added, but fly fishing was incredible. We did that we took the horses from Ramuda up. We took up 30.
Wow.
And
you had accommodations for that many guests?
Yeah.
Well,
they had, there were outbuildings up there and the big main building. That was great. Those were two great summers up there. Great weather. Durango was small and fun then. We'd go into the melodrama, and we had a box there, and I'd go see the same play. It didn't matter how many times. I just loved it. We entertained. This is the type of people that the Burdens were. Sophie, of course, was with us. At the end of the melodrama season, we had all of the actors and their families come out to the ranch for a day of fishing, riding, barbecue. We did a skit for them, and that's the way the Burdens were. And they just, everybody loved it. Staff, guests,
yep.
The actors.
Yep.
Great fun.
Well, I can attest to two things. Number one, that is true. And number two, that you still know how to do the Mexican cooking. Because I've eaten it. Is there anything else you'd like to folks to know that we haven't covered?
Oh, dear. It's sad that it's sort of a bygone era. It really, kids loved it, and the kids of today don't have that type of experience for the most part. A few kids get to go to ranches up north in the summer, but it's there were very special bonds formed, and you got to know another way of life. As I say, most of the guests, there were guests from California, but the Lane family that owned Sunset Magazine, they were regular guests that would come over. But, and of course, we had a ton of Californians when it was D.C. ride time and Las Damas, the two rides. Probably a very memorable experience for somebody who really didn't like horses and didn't like to ride. That was me. Sophie asked me to go on the Las Damas ride 5 days on a horse. I could barely walk when I got back, but we were lucky. The day in camp, I probably would have stayed in camp, except we were out at Buckhorn Springs, I think we were camped. And the day in camp was to ride to Castle Hot Springs when Castle Hot Springs was still, had not burned. And we got to swim in the pools, and we ate lunch there. And I ate lunch there several times before it burned. And that probably was a very memorable experience. It was back in the days when they rode. They did not take their campers in private corrals for their horses. I was horrified when I went out today in camp with Bev O'Leary. I couldn't believe what had happened. We slept on the ground, and Al Baum was our cook.
Major changes on Las Damas. Not so on the D.C.
No, except well, you've got a group that really wants it the old way.
Right.
Which we don't. With Las Damas, they don't.
No, it's true.
So.
One last question, Annie, and that is, would you be able to be here April 2nd and 3rd to participate in an oral history project at the Desert Caballeros Western Museum's Literary Festival?
And I'm not sure. I can't say at this point. My plans were to come down. Maybe I'd have to come earlier. Were to come down after the 10th of April. I have to be in Sedona about the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th. But maybe I could do something and come earlier when it might be cooler.
Well, I'm sure, yes. Well, I'm sure Lynn Downey will be in touch with you. Annie, thank you so much. Been
well,
a lot of fun.
You.
Great story.
Thank you.
Yeah, good
it's,
time.
It's great to have somebody that's an old friend run me through this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
so,
been great. We've had a lot of good dinners and porch time and cocktails together.
Remember when the Gila Monster came down?
Yes.
Joe sits there. When I was living in Wickenburg, and they were out for dinner, he and Linda, and Joe, it's about 9 o'clock at night or so because it's summertime. We eat late, and Joe says, "Oh, look what's coming!" And I just figured it was going to be a rattlesnake because I lived in Rattlesnake Haven out there. And here was a big old Gila Monster came down, made the turn, went off into the desert. We've never seen him since. So,
right.
Which they, you know, they when I was here in the '60s, nobody ever talked about seeing a Gila Monster. And I did see one on the way to Castle Hot Springs on the road once, but that was very rare. And now you see them. I saw them out by my place on the road, the back road in. I can't remember five or six times?
Usually in March. That's when they get active, and then they go underground. So
Mike Billingsley says that there's a place that they hibernate just north of where you start up Yarnell Hill. Mm-hmm. In the mountains there, there's a place. Johnny used to have one. They'd see it early in the year, and it would be going south, and then later in the year, it was going north out there for a long time.
Yep.
No, there are lots of things you can think of, but it was a very special time in my life. It's a lot of fun.
Yep.
And if you're going to work, you might as well have fun.
That's right.
So that's what it did.
Thanks again, Annie.
Okay.